I missed an ultrasound for this recording. You know that, right?
Wow.
You know, it's weird that you say that because we do ask all guests to miss ultrasounds for the recording, but
that's
normally they don't say it.
That's a prereq. If you're not missing an ultrasound, you're not a guest. Sorry, but
yeah, you don't care enough. That's my problem. My only weakness is that I care too much.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage. I'm your host, Chris Savage, and as always, I am joined by my podcast producer extraordinaire, Sylvie Lubow. Sylvie, what's up?
Tis I.
Tis you.
Tis I.
Here we are, back again, ripping an episode.
Oh, no. Already a snort.
That's what we want. I think, you know, if there's enough snorts in the episode, then we've hit something that's high enough quality, right?
It's beyond talking too loud. It's
snorting too loud
is what
it is. Well, that's your own spinoff show. Snorting Too Loud with Sylvie. I mean, honestly, that's a great title.
It is.
But this show is called Talk Too Loud.
Yes.
Because when I get excited, I cannot control the volume of my voice. Very excited today about our guest. We have the one and only Chris Levine. Chris is the head of production at Wistia. He loves video. He loves making video. He loves testing video. He's an early adopter. He likes to prank me with things. And we have him today on the show to talk about some real serious stuff, like how AI is really changing how you make video and how we think about video. We're going to talk about a lot of the tools that Chris uses every day, from pre-production through to post-production, things that he uses to make his storyboarding process go faster, things that he uses to clean up bad audio, things that he uses to overhaul set design in software. So it's very cool. And I'm excited because, you know, not only Chris is really like leading on this stuff. We do a lot of the stuff at Wistia. I get to play around with it. Obviously, it's my background as well. And a lot of this stuff, we're working to try to figure out how to get into Wistia too. So maybe if you pay very close attention to this interview today, you may get a sense of some of the things that will be coming to Wistia very soon. But before we dive into the interview with Chris, we have to start with the quintessential question.
Yes.
What's got us talking too loud? So Sylvie, what's got you talking too loud?
What has got me talking too loud? Well, it was Mother's Day very recently. Mm. Happy Mother's Day to Zan, to my mama. To all the mamas out there.
All the moms.
But the thing I'm talking too loud about is I am trying to go gluten-free for a month.
Go, congratulations.
Yeah, just see what the old anti-inflammatory diet can do for my Hashimoto's. And
there's a gluten, first time for everything, so I'm excited for you.
Gluten is sneaky. I didn't know.
It is sneaky, yeah.
It's sneaky.
Yes.
Went out for some Chinese food. Had an interesting conversation about soy sauce. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't realize that gluten was often used as like a thickening agent in sauces.
Wow.
In sauces. Yeah, so
that's kind of rough.
It's interesting.
It's just in everything. So you have to be hyper aware.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. Yeah. Gluten is everything.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, as you know, I was allergic to dairy for a very long time. And once you start paying very close attention, you realize that there's like often like milk protein put in like lots of other stuff.
It's
and
crazy.
That was the thing that I had like a problem with. And so it's very, very
How did you overcome your allergy?
I just did. I overcame it with sheer will.
So, you're that strong.
I think just lifting did it. no, I don't really know. I've gone on some pretty deep like explorations trying to understand this. And I have a guess, which is that I think it was microbiome related. There's a pretty good, I don't know if you'd call it crackpot, but there's like a documentary on Netflix about the microbiome that just came out. And I watched that recently and it was interesting because it aligned with a lot of stuff that I'd heard before, which is like the microbiome has like a much bigger impact than we think on like mental health and health. And I wonder if the thing that set it off was like a lot of like antibiotics when I was a kid. And then
you were sickly,
I guess. And then like almost 6 years ago, I stopped drinking.
Right.
And drinking impacts your microbiome, obviously, because like alcohol kills stuff. So
yes.
I stopped that. I had was having no dairy, except I was like microdosing butter. Like I would have butter all the time because butter is mostly fat and not protein.
Yeah, what a thing to microdose.
And so then when I accidentally had a lot of dairy when I was in Greece a year and a half ago or so, and I had no reaction. And I had been vigilant about having absolute zero. And then I started to be, wait, if things change, I slowly reintroduce things back and I've been completely fine. So
wow,
that's my
inspiring.
Best guess.
That, it was microbiome, that gives me hope.
Alcohol made it worse. Cut it out. Microdose. Boom, boom, boom. Back.
Boom, boom, boom. Back. Okay. Well, that
this
was
is
my
the depth
talking
that
too
I
loud.
Assume everyone wants, right?
Yeah,
this is what
no,
they're
they
like.
Want it,
I'm
they
here
want
to listen
to
Chris
deep.
Levine. Yeah. Yeah, but they want to go deep. They want to go deep on dairy allergies and overcoming them. Yeah.
I was going to say, this was my talking too loud. So what has you talking too loud, even though you were talking too loud?
So Mother's Day was great. But for me, what has me talking too loud is I got these glasses.
The smart Clark Kent.
The smart glasses.
/ Blink-182 glasses.
Thank you so much. These are the Meta Ray-Bans, and you can use them as speakers. You can talk to Meta and get questions, or you can record stuff. And so I've been recording. Let's see what it looks like. So now I'm recording.
It's that simple. A little light goes on.
And honestly, these have just been really fun because the content you can make when your hands free is fun. And yeah. I brought it last week to our triannual business review and recorded a bunch of stuff. You can see on LinkedIn or my Instagram. And it was just so fun. And getting people's reactions to it was fun. And then I wore them this weekend. And Olympia had like a t-ball practice and stuff. And it was like, I'm playing catch with her. And it's just like a different way to remember stuff.
Yeah.
Will I keep using it? I don't know. But is it fun? Yeah. I'm talking too loud about this right now.
What are the ethics of recording, would you say?
I think it's the same as anything. You need consent, right?
You need consent.
And obviously, in this case, Ray-Ban is like, you got to have the light. So there's a flashing light. It's kind of hard to miss.
Yeah.
But I imagine we're going to see a lot more of this. Because even just the speakers in this thing are pretty good. So if you don't need AirPods all the time, it's kind of nice. Like a little background. So that's
I like the look of the glasses, you know, like
the Wayfarers, they've all the classic Ray-Ban styles. So that's how they really get you.
That's how they get you. That's how they
and
get
I can
you.
Pretend I'm in Blink-182, Blink-182.
You're in the band.
Yeah. I'm like so in a band
Blink-181.
Right now. Okay. This is enough of this. I think we should get this interview with Chris. So here we go. Here's the interview with Chris Levine.
Let's do it.
Hi guys, it's me,
Frank the Ad Guy.
The customer journey is complex, but with Service Hub, HubSpot's all-in-one service and support platform, things can get a whole lot easier. From customer health scores to an AI-powered help desk, Service Hub makes it easier for you to support, strengthen, and grow your customer base. Learn more at hubspot.com/service. Putting on a webinar shouldn't require a master's in JavaScript. That's why we created Wistia Live. Wistia Live makes creating webinars a breeze. Customize the registration page, engage your audience with polls and live Q&A tools, then measure performance. You can even create clips for social with our AI tools. It's that easy. Learn more at wistia.com/live.
All right, Chris, look, we're going to get going here. You and I have worked together for a long time. We know each other very well. But this show is for people who don't know you very well. They're going to get to know you. They're going to learn about you. They're going to learn about how creativity has changed, how production's changing, how AI is impacting production. But I have to start by asking you the question. What has you talking to a lot today?
Construction costs.
Okay, here we go.
Say more. Too high.
Out of control. Out of control. It's 2024. Things have tripled in the past few years. I went this morning, I woke up and took my dad's pickup truck to get some granite. Just a granite step.
I mean, what is it, Wednesday? The type of thing you do on a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday morning. I'm driving. I'm having a beautiful drive. And I get to the granite shop and I need one step to complete a three-step project. I had two steps in stock and I needed one extra step to make some steps down from my back porch.
Say step again.
So I'm stepping into the step place I'm thinking one granite step. How much do you think for a granite step? 4 feet of granite. It's a 4 foot by 1 foot by 7 inch riser. How much you think?
I'm going to let you guess, Selvi, because I've just purchased stone. I've just purchased stone.
$500.
$500 for one step.
One step.
So if you're making like a staircase, you're spending that much money, $500.
I don't know about steps. I live in Brooklyn.
I was thinking I was going to pay $250 for this step.
Okay.
I swipe my card and then I ask, you know, I'm like, how much? Because I'm not buying this step at this point. I drove all the way up there. $600 for one step. I literally said, what? In the shop, everyone looked at me. And I said, are you sure? Can you let me see the price sheet? Is this with my dad's discount? And he said, yeah, it's, you know, the cost of construction's gone crazy. I can't believe it. So I spent triple what I spent in 2017 for these pieces of granite.
It's unforgivable. It's unforgivable.
Look, sometimes you need granite and this is what can happen. You know, prices change and this is what a free market's about because now you're going elsewhere. You're not going to get granite from them anymore.
Well, I think granite is granite. I mean, they're still giving me the best price in town, but granite is forever. So, you know, you do it once, you do it right.
And that's why you get granite.
And that's why you get forever. Granite.
All right, Levine, let's talk about production. So you're the head of production at Wistia, but I don't really know the full story. Like, how did you actually get started in video production? What did that look like?
Well, I actually got started in like elementary school and middle school, and I was recording on the camcorder and then playing it back into my VCR and clicking record on a VCR, and that's how you would edit. You'd edit tape to tape. And I was doing this. Nobody was doing this. I was getting easy A's in school. Like if you just
because
did
you were making you were you making video videos for, instead of
yeah people like, were making like yeah. the trifold project poster board thing. I'm making a video, and I got me an A like that clockwork. So I'm like, you know, there's something to this, and so then I started shooting some weddings and first communions and like bat mitzvahs, all this stuff. I would shoot anything, and I would hustle gear. This is when I was like 13, 14 years old. My mom would drop me off. I'd do the thing. I'd come back and I'd edit it all together, tape to tape. And I kept hustling from job to job, buying better and better gear. I got my first digital camcorder, a mini DV camcorder in high school, my sophomore year, PowerMac G4, Final Cut Pro. And I fell in love with the video process when you could start editing on a computer. You didn't have to deal with going from VCR to VCR. That was kind of BS. And I started freelancing. And, you know, it was from job to job. And then I went to school for it. And here we are.
And here we are. Just a blink of an eye. But you saw this opportunity when you were in school that like, hey, they want me to do a diorama or they want me to do a written project. Like, I believe I can make this thing in video. How do you believe in yourself that you could do that?
Man, I just tried it. You just try it. And it was an easy way to differentiate.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a similar time thinking, oh, I should make videos and like being really overwhelmed by the options.
I had a mentor. His name was Anthony Marapisi. And he helped. Yeah, he's great. He's a fine Italian fellow in Cranston, Rhode Island. And he was a friend of my mom's growing up. And he knew that I liked video. And so I started working with him for him, shooting these things on a broadcast camera. And he had Video Toaster. Did anyone hear of Video Toaster?
Yeah.
It was Video Toaster.
It was like one of the early, early nonlinear editors before Final Cut.
Okay.
And so I got a little bit of experience through him seeing how like crazy and how you can just think totally different about video when you're doing it on a computer and not having to deal with going from tape to tape. So I was primed from him to be excited about the editing process of video, and it demystified the whole thing too.
Interesting. I guess the question I have is you're constantly playing with new things. You're looking at new tech. Like, what do you think? What have you seen anything today that looks like the Video Toaster of what will be next?
You know, the revolutionary moment was actually not even Video Toaster because it was so expensive and so out of touch. It was like a $15,000 or $20,000 rig.
Oh, wow.
My aha moment with video for the masses was when I saw an iMac DV at Sears. They had an iMac DV. It was the first iMac that had iMovie and that you could plug in a mini DV camcorder and offload your footage. It blew my mind, and it was very inexpensive. Think of that iMac, talking the Bondi Blue iMac. It was probably like $1,500 or something. Blew me away. So I think right now, hot button issue, artificial intelligence, that is the moment. That is the iMac DV moment of 2023, 2024. Before that, it was the iPhone 10. That's when it was like, okay, like we're going to be able to make really solid looking stuff on nothing but a phone. And Apple has continued on with that promise. But now we're in a whole new era with generative AI and 11 Labs and voice synthesis and making a video, a beautiful shot from nothing but a text prompt. That is just absolutely, absolutely mind-blowing and game-changing.
Okay, so let's talk about what does your workflow look like today? Like when you have a video you want to make, are you using some of these tools? Like what does it actually look like from start to finish today?
Well, every video is different and some are spontaneous. Some are like cold, hard, calculated. Like the calculated ones, I'm finding I'm using a lot of tools that didn't exist even last year. But for a calculated video, it really comes down to three things. It's like the message, what's the audience, what's the deadline? Then I kind of work backwards from there to kind of come up with a script or an idea for a video. But, you know, take generative AI in terms of storyboarding. The hardest part of the video process is going from zero to something. And with a combination of ChatGPT to get from a blank page into some type of a script is incredible. But then to be able to extract what's in your brain using text to image with Midjourney or Bing or DALL-E or Adobe Firefly, that takes it to a whole other level because then you can, for these very calculated videos, you can actually extract what's in your brain and get sign-off from stakeholders before you even set up a shot. It just saves the whole production process from being a guessing game to like, yep, I can see this video now. Product marketing person, and I think this is the right way of moving forward. Let's go for it.
And this is something right that you weren't doing unless before it was like a video that was going to take like either a huge amount of time or like hyper important, right? Like you weren't making like animatics or sketch versions of a video to get sign off until pretty recently, right?
Totally. Yeah. And the animatics we'd have to pull from like either stock images or something we found on the internet or a previous video. So the animatics that we're making right now are just saving so much time later in the process because we're all in agreement and we're all seeing the vision before the video actually comes to light. So those are those calculated videos. There are some spontaneous videos that, you know, are more docu-driven. They're kind of like slice of life moments. Savage, you know, we've made some of those videos most recently, Cybertruck one.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's more about the moment than the message, and it's more about the moment than even like the production value. But that being said, that Cybertruck video, I used AI in there, and it feels like everything was so spontaneous and feels like everything was raw out of the iPhone. No way. I used Adobe Speech Enhance to clean up really bad audio from the iPhone. Mm. That tool didn't exist last year, and it took the shot from being unusable to being almost the star of the show. So AI is creeping into all parts of my workflow in all types of videos.
So that one, I think people should definitely check out if they haven't seen it. It's on my LinkedIn page. And I think that was very interesting because when we were shooting it, it was so just trying to be in the moment. Like you showed up and you're like, I literally don't know what we're going to do, but we're just going to record this thing and see what happens. Then there's been videos where like you've sent rough sketches of things that you've made my AI cloned voice as part of the script. And there is something really different about that where I don't have to imagine it. So I feel like it cuts down on the pitch and the time so dramatically. But I think explaining this to folks is really interesting because we're making more video than we were before. that are predominantly not AI videos, but we're using AI in lots of places to be like much more productive, to get sign off faster. And yeah, just maybe you can just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Using AI for the storyboard process, for animatics, for going from zero to one on a script, for writing dummy copy to put into our app that I then have to screen cast for, you know, there, all that stuff in the pre-production part when you're actually planning for your production, massive time saving. Where AI is starting to get really interesting is, so take, for example, this is our studio space in Providence. We have just moved in here. We do not have anything besides this futon and a space rug and this iMac, this old iMac G4 back here. That's it. We have video gear and we have tables and chairs. That's all we have. We have one roll of seamless paper too. Okay. So that's just a pink
roll of paper. No, it's like nothing.
We have to go to IKEA. You an IKEA fan, Sylvie?
Love IKEA.
Okay, so we need to go to IKEA to get some props and zhuzh this place up and be able to make it shoot ready. I'm going to land the plane on this here. Using generative fill with Photoshop, I was able to grab a shot of Dan in front of nothing but a roll of seamless paper. Dan, our VP of marketing. So with generative fill, and mind you, this tool did not exist last year. I'm going to go ahead and just extend this paper to the edges of the screen. Okay. So now we got that.
Amazing. And now already amazed.
Maybe I should put, you know, like a house plant or something here. I'm going to just do like a floor standing house plant. Oh, that's pretty. All right.
Okay.
That's decent.
Okay.
All right. So maybe we'll try it again. We'll see what else we got here. We'll go with this, okay?
This is crazy.
This didn't exist last year, Sylvie. This stuff is happening so fast. All right. So we'll do that and we'll move it over a little bit.
I like that one.
All right. So there's that. And now maybe we should put like, let's put a bookshelf over here.
Dan reads. Okay.
He at least pretends to read.
Dan looks at covers.
Okay. Pretty
this
wild,
is nuts.
Right?
This is nuts.
So
you just created a room, like a
I'm literally
room.
Building a scene with nothing in it. And so that has saved me from having to, yeah, all right, that's a table there. And let's just throw a little like plant on here. Because now you can add on top of stuff too.
Yeah, so, that's what I think is interesting is building this up, like extending the background and then adding like the elements to give it like a more dynamic feel.
Right. So now all I have to do is just export this, which is a transparent thing, and then plop it on top of my original. So this is my original. There we got the extensions, the screen. We got a house plant, got a nice bookshelf. We got an empty table with a house plant on it. So there's like a monetary, you can quantify that.
Right. You don't have to buy, you don't have to buy the workbench. You don't have to buy the plants. You don't have to buy the bookshelf.
You have to spend the time to get it. Like it's always there. You can change it in a hot second. And then what is that doing for production time?
Generative AI, you're literally fixing it in post and you're saving tons of time with the production process. Typically you add anything to a scene. Now you have to light it. And you have to make sure there are no shadows on the screen and you have to house those props somewhere and they have to be all the bespoke stuff. So there's a quantifiable number attached to like how little money you need to spend to be able to clean up a shot. And then also it's democratizing the video medium.
So the accessibility and democratization is amazing. Like it feels super empowering for someone who doesn't make videos to be like, whoa, I could maybe do this, but if everyone is doing it, everyone is using generative AI in similar ways. Like, how do you differentiate and like, what will be rewarded?
Well, now is the time to be more uniquely human than ever before. This example that I just shared of building a set out of nothing using generative AI, the way to differentiate yourself from that would be to have bespoke props and have a bespoke set and to use your office and to have people in the background working in the background and to actually use the people at your company. Like we have always at Wistia over my entire tenure tried to use as many people from the actual company on camera as possible, because that is our X factor. That is our competitive edge, because all of our competitors are using actors and you can feel it. And so if all of our competitors are also going to be using generative AI to make a generic houseplant, that's one thing. But if you have a houseplant and you have a little Lenny figure in that houseplant, or right. you have this space rug that's in my background over here, you know, there are ways that you can, even just with set design, make your video presence extremely unique and human.
I think it's interesting to look at the trajectory, right? Because the trajectory is, it's getting easier to make an image that looks good. It's getting easier to edit stuff. It's getting easier to add music. It's getting easier to fix sound quality. So what do you think are the skills that people need to be thinking about, like honing and working on now, that are going to be probably even more important in a world where it's easier to make video in the future?
My instinct is media training, your talent on camera and getting people comfortable on camera, sounding natural on camera, being themselves on camera. It's my instinct. However,
but can you, before you go off of that, can you just describe like what that is actually like when you see someone who is not comfortable on camera, but then you're trying to like fix it in post? Like what happens?
It's very unnatural to be in front of a camera. You can't really see yourself. So like when you're on a webcam, you can usually see yourself, so you know that you don't look stupid or you don't sound bad. When you're in front of a camera, you really are, there are usually lights around. If you're actually doing some type of a big production, there's a microphone, there are multiple people in the room. So the natural human tendency is to close up, get cold and clammy, and you don't like the sound of your voice in the moment, and you're nervous about saying the wrong thing, and you're not sure if it's going to be taken out of context. And you maybe have zero trust with the person that is behind the camera. So they could do anything with this footage. So you really don't want to say the wrong thing. So typically when I see somebody that's not good on camera or that is really uncomfortable on camera, it's usually because they're so nervous and they're not actually being themselves. Like when I talk to somebody in the hallway or on the phone, or like that's usually their true self. And that's what I'm trying to capture on camera. So that's the stuff that I'm looking for is... if somebody's really uncomfortable, that's going to read and it's going to be very hard to edit around that.
And so you're saying like in a world where the tech has made it much easier for anyone to make a video, being comfortable on camera is going to become even more important.
I think so, because I think it being human and being authentic is going to be more important than ever. In 5 years time, we're not going to just be saying this video contains AI generated material, which is what YouTube's trying to do right now. They're trying to make it so that you have to disclose if generative AI was used. In 5 years, everything's going to be generative AI. So that disclaimer doesn't even make sense. The novelty is going to be this video was made 100% like with real humans. Like that's going to be a novelty.
Do you think this is similar to when we've watched and like as CGI came? There were suddenly like movies like Children of Men where it felt like one long take. And so that, you know, you come across that in a world of like all the CGI and you're like, oh shit, like maybe there's a CGI here, but this feels so much more intense. And it, like, obviously it's like 10,000 times harder to do it the way they did it.
What's interesting to me is the thought of how much better digital avatars, AI avatars are going to get. Because if you can cross that uncanny valley, then you don't even need to be good on camera because you can control inflection and you can control timing and pacing and all of that.
But someone has to know how to control those things. I guess that's what I've been thinking is like, you could have it now, but like the details of you and I will work together all the time and I'm saying some line and then you give me feedback on like the inflection or what I'm emphasizing. And maybe it's like the back half of a word or whatever. And I don't know to do that. You know, I'm good, but I can't always get it right. You know what I mean? But I find that interesting because when we go back and look at the edits, like you have this vision of what it should feel like and it shows up. And I would bet that most people don't. So how
like most people don't have that vision?
they don't know that, like, you should have this inflection at the end of this statement because that's what's going to land, or the slightly longer pause in the edit and what have you. And so it feels like even with AI avatars that are incredible that could have that, you still have to know how to do it. You have to know what's going to resonate. And that seems like that's really hard.
I think a lot of it is going to come down to creative taste, because I am actually, I'm of the line of thinking that with enough training, you'll be able to get a natural conversational sounding AI avatar very soon. That doesn't require like a crazy amount of direction and creative direction. But where I think if from the video producer side of things to think about where AI is heading in 5 years, what you could be honing in on right now is your creative taste and how to be an incredible prompt engineer, or when to know when you actually should be making something crazy silly as opposed to really straight ahead, or when you can be injecting humor, or where you're pulling from, like when you could be using nostalgia to elicit an emotion with your viewer. Because that stuff, like, it's a computer's not going to just put 2000s iMac G4 in the back of my background. Like, somebody needs to think to put a piece of nostalgia back there. And so that's where I'm coming from, like that prompt engineer mindset, because in 5 years, everyone's going to be a prompt engineer for any line of work. But you need to be able to pull taste and creativity from somewhere and take your palette and actually apply it to the video you're making.
Okay, let's go into taste. How do you know if someone has good taste?
I think it's easier to spot when somebody has bad taste.
Go on.
On my, this is a true story. When we've hired for a video producer role, one of my favorite questions that is an easy way to find out if somebody has bad taste is, what's the funniest video you've seen on YouTube in the past, you know, whatever. If somebody, I literally had applicants write in, like, what does the fox say? You remember that video?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Garbage.
Yeah.
If anybody likes that video, they have terrible taste. And they're
sorry,
not
guys.
Going to work at Wistia.
What about an oldie but a goodie? The grape smashing lady.
Fantastic. Sylvie, fantastic. That's why you're great at what you do.
Okay. All right.
The reason it's on my mind is like that, what you're talking about is like having taste, right? And like taste for a style. And honing that taste in your craft and how it's going to be more important. Because if you have every bell and whistle and everything you can do, you can give everyone infinite access to AI. They're not going to all make great stuff. It's going to come down to probably knowing your audience. It's going to come down to the taste of what resonates, what you like, what you care about, all that kind of stuff. And I find it interesting because it's also one of the things that in my own experience, just seeing over the years, there's people who have taste and they understand why decisions end up looking the way that they do. Like they see some campaign, they're like, aha, this is it. This feels different. This feels unique. And there's other people who don't clock that it's different or don't clock the uniqueness of it. And that adds up over time to very big difference. If you can find people, I think, who share your sensibilities and your taste, the quality of the work that you make and the stuff you give yourself permission to do is just so different.
Can you elevate your taste? Can you like make it better, or is it just like innate?
I think you can elevate your taste, and you can, I think most of it is innate though. And I'm also not saying that we need to only surround ourselves with people that share the exact same taste, that find the exact same things funny. But there are red flags when it comes to creative taste. And I think those are easier to spot than somebody that has fantastic taste.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think the thing, though, that I'll say that I've noticed is that people who have really great taste are often super sensitive.
Mm.
They're like really in tune with how other people feel. And so that's what I think is like, you, if you are creating something and you have a very strong sense of how someone's going to respond to it, that increases your chance of having good taste. But you also, if you can pay attention to that emotion, I think that's the same way that you can improve your taste.
I think that's how you get to be a good editor as well. A video editor, in my opinion, is all about pacing and knowing when to give something a breather or knowing when to jump over another line. And a lot of that comes from, I think, watching people watch stuff, knowing when they're tuning out.
Watching people watch stuff is not, I feel like I haven't heard that necessarily before.
It's also like, it's interesting too, because a lot of the watching people watch stuff can be really horrible. Like it can be really, really painful, like especially at the beginning. Like I think about that a lot. It's like, you know, I remember the first time I had a short film like in art class and I had to put up there and watch the room watch it. And I'm just like, oh no.
It's like 10x'd.
Yeah. And it's like things I thought were funny or clever, like not hitting the way you thought. And you're like, oh, this is so painful.
Yeah.
Then you have to talk to them after, what about this? What about that? And it's like such just emotional like torture. But is the second time
easier and better?
Hopefully. Okay. I mean, I think that's also why, you know, doing things a lot, you know, the rule of 100 versus like doing them once or twice is really important because you look at it and you're like, okay, I need to figure this out over the next 100 attempts, not the next 5. Well, then you can give yourself a lot more freedom and you can give yourself a break when things aren't working. Mm. There's also the trust element that you and I talk a lot about, which is like, if you have trust, then you have the freedom to make mistakes and you have the freedom to try things. You have the freedom to like get the feedback. And
this is what trust looks like, Sylvie. Savage and Brendan, I can literally say, I need you in the studio at X time and they will show up no matter what I have planned for them.
I love that.
I did not tell them before I bought them Western cowboy outfits that we were going to dress them up like cowboys and that Savage was going to ride a fake horse head that was actually me just like, you know, flapping a horse mannequin head to make it look like he was riding a horse. But they did it and they probably felt, I'm guessing you felt like super nervous that this was going to possibly come out. No,
honestly, no, I didn't. No.
Well, that's the trust piece of it too.
Yeah,
I knew it was going to be great.
How I feel about this at this point is it's like when I got in there, I think it's so funny that this is happening. It's so absurd.
It was pretty funny.
And then I just think to myself, if this is terrible, you're going to be the first person to tell me, and you're going to be like, we can't release it. And if anything, I take that as permission to go completely hog wild. And just give you whatever you need and trust that, like, you know, if it's something that's too absurd, too far, doesn't fit in, whatever, we just cut it.
Yeah, it's taken years to get to that level of trust, but that is ultimately what can make you an incredible director, an incredible video producer, is to understand that people, you need to earn trust from folks that are going to be on camera.
Yeah. But Levine, you and I were having a conversation about this the other day, which was like, okay, so I trust you because we shoot all this stuff. There's all these bad takes. There's all this stuff that shouldn't go. There's dumb jokes. There's whatever. And it's just every flub, everything. It's just like, well, I trust that you're going to take the best stuff. And you're not going to make me look like an idiot. Even if I maybe need to play the role of looking like an idiot in a particular video, I trust that you will put me in a position where, like, even in that case, overall, I shouldn't look like an idiot, you know?
Yeah, you play that very well, too.
Thank you so much. Really good. But it's interesting because even with the AI piece, like, I know you can fix my voice now.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I trust you the same way because it's like, you could have just told me to stand in the line, I would have said it. So it's like, you can clone my voice and fix it. I was like, I trust you. If you need to do that, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I do think that's the interesting thing. That's like the trust in a world with infinite AI, like trust gets more important, not less, because your image could be used in more ways. Your voice, your avatar, like could be used in more ways, which I think is just so interesting because like you're talking about the input side, the production side, it matters on the output side, but I also think that's how you actually get to a place of doing really interesting things that are unique, and it's very, very hard to do that if you don't have the space to work in.
It's the old adage, seems trite, seems overdone, but it's worth saying again that like a creative space is a safe space and you have to be able to push things too far and throw it out and then be able to back it off a little bit every now and again. You just have to. And you can't do that if you don't have the trust of the people that you're working with.
I want to go into one other aspect of this, just because this comes up a lot, is feedback, which is like, if you want to do great stuff, you want to push the boundaries, like you're going to have to be able to take feedback. You're going to have to be able to give it. And this is a thing that a lot of people struggle with. Like, what do you do if someone writes, they've never written something before and they write a blog post and send it to you and it's bad? What do you do if they make a video and it's bad? Like, how do you get to a place where you can give a lot of feedback and you can take it?
Actually, our head of product marketing, Elise Beck, has been an incredible inspiration for how to leave feedback. And she offers criticism with a suggestion for how to improve it every time.
It's not just the critique.
It's not just the critique. And sometimes the suggestion isn't perfect, and she knows that, but it is a jumping off point. It's the equivalent of going from zero to one on something. It's so much easier to have something to poke at than to just be thinking about something that is the absolute blank slate. And so I really appreciate when somebody will give me a piece of feedback and then offer a solution that I can then choose to ignore, or I'll choose to try. Most of the time, it is a good, you know, suggestion. But ultimately, I think there's another thing around feedback, which Dan Mills, our VP of marketing, preaches quite a bit, which is, if he disagrees with a piece of feedback that's coming from two people that he trusts, he will not die on that mountain.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm probably not seeing something. So like, that just emphasizes the importance of having people around you whose opinions you value, who you trust, who you respect their taste. And taste comes from all different, like, there's all different meanings of the word taste. It's not just like the same sense of humor or the same visual taste or the same set of palettes or the same messaging taste. It's, you know, the whole gamut.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we have talked about that a lot. Dan's talked about that a lot. And I think about that a lot. Because if you're doing something risky, that means that a lot of people are going to think it's not a good idea, right?
Yeah.
Like, if everyone thinks it's a good idea, it's often the signal, not always, but often that's too safe, right? That you're not actually pushing enough. And when you're trying to build a brand and you're trying to stand out, being really safe is not how it works. You know, you have to take risks. And so this is like a really interesting thing. I think it's also the reason why I was asking about the taste piece earlier, because if you're doing anything risky, there's going to be people who disagree probably with some of it.
Yes. I think a lot of the videos we've made with you on SME have been risky, because you're pulling back the curtain on your personal life to a professional audience.
Yeah.
A, and then B is like, there's like a tech bro way that you can do some of this stuff that we're not.
Yeah.
It can come off as.
But that's the part that's so interesting, because there is a tech bro thing, and we've been navigating against that. You're navigating against that in the edit, in terms of the vibe and the stuff, and even the setup. Like, when you came to get me for the Cybertruck thing, you recorded something. We're surprising Chris with this. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, it's like, I bought a Cybertruck. Well, are you a rich?
Hang on. Hold on. We have a lot to unpack here, because I will own one of these things, and I'm not a rich.
Yeah. But
I'm not saying you are. And it's
not
rich.
There's a perception. There's a perception, is my point. There's cultural perceptions of these things that you are aware of and navigating at all times.
Yeah.
I think that's like, you could have any terrible inputs that you could produce something that looks really good, but if you're not aware of the cultural perception and how you think back to like being sensitive, having taste, like if you don't really know how people are going to react to it, or have some guess, you're going to go way off course.
Well, it goes back to knowing your audience, right? Because if you come out with like the big sort of stereotypical tech bro persona, they're going to be turned off. Like, that's not Wistia's customer in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to know your audience when you're creating the video. You have to know the characters really well too.
I want to hit another point too, which is interesting, because it's like, that's not who I am, which Lavinia knows. And other people know. That's like, I'm authentically being myself. But there's a lot of people who are that, and they make stuff that works for them.
Mm-hmm. But that's because that's their brand, right?
That's what I'm saying. So I think it's like, it's like back to the authenticity thing of like actually being authentic and delivering what it is you consistently try to deliver back is like, is the important part, which also, it's easy to screw that up though.
Yeah. It is.
It's easy to screw up, especially if you have somebody that doesn't have that doesn't respect your brand or that you don't have trust in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just hitting this point so much because I just think for a long time, I think people have been really afraid to use video because they think it might hurt their brand. Mm. But often when they say that, what I think they mean is that the production quality might hurt their brand. That is usually what people think about.
Like it's going to look low budget or...
Yes, okay. It's going to look low budget. Doesn't look like high quality. It doesn't look pretty. It doesn't look well lit. The sound is bad. And those things would hurt your brand if like from the sense of... You know, if you're trying to be a really elevated brand and you have something that sounds terrible, like people, they don't know how to use a mic or whatever. So, but that stuff is all going to be eliminated. Mm-hmm. That I think we can be pretty sure of, that like any video you shoot with your phone, with your computer, whatever, any video is going to look way better, sound way better. Those excuses are going to go away, which I think is going to get more people comfortable making and sharing videos. But within that, we're going to also end up with a lot more people who are violating other things that actually would hurt their brand. It's gonna be much easier to do that,
right? Like not respecting your viewers' time, or like making a video that actually should have been an email.
Exactly. The making a video that should have been an email is a good example of like sometimes you don't want to wait for the thing, you just need to have that, like you just want to read it, you want to skim it,
right?
And that's a tendency that happens when people start to figure out how to make videos. They can go too far sometimes. I don't know, it's just interesting because like this is coming really fast, I think, and how people get ready for it and plan for it is like just, it's very different than how we got here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the rapid fire section. So, Chris, rapid fire, yes. Here we go.
Okay.
What's the type of video that every business should be making these days?
Support video. If you're not using video to leverage support and answer frequently asked questions, you're doing it wrong. If you're only thinking about your front page video or Instagram ads, you're missing a massive opportunity to use video for what it's best at, which is scaling interaction and scaling emotion and scaling somebody's time. Didn't think I was going to say that, huh?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think that was...
All right, what else you got?
Okay. What's the best success metric for a video?
Depends on the video.
Say more.
Great.
Okay.
Answer.
Oh, all right. Okay. You want to say more?
Great answer. Say more.
Success metric on a front page video, it would be engagement. Like, I want people to be able to watch as much of that video as possible. Success metric on a support video would be time watched. What's the aggregate amount of time that somebody has spent watching this video? Because that every second that somebody watches a support video is a second saved of a customer support person's time.
That makes sense.
What's your favorite video that you've made for Wistia and why?
This is literally an impossible question. I've made thousands of videos at this company.
I know.
And they're all amazing.
And this is rapid fire, so.
Oh man, I was coming out of the gate so hot, and now you guys are really throwing me for a loop here. All right, I'm gonna give you, this may not be my favorite video because I literally need to think long and hard about this. And if you catch me on a different day, it'll be a different answer. Top five video that I've ever made at Wistia was the farewell to 5D video, where we ripped off the We Are the World thing, especially because I just watched Greatest Night in Pop, which is the behind the scenes of the making of We Are the World. And that video where we got the whole office shut down and we're all singing together, going around the microphones, and we were doing duets, and we were covering Because You Love Me. I'm everything I am. It's actually the keys. I'm everything I am because you love me.
Wow.
Like, that is ridiculous that we did that at a company. And we shut down the entire company to make that video.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. There you go.
So I was like, oh, yeah, there's a dollar amount attributed to that. We can sit down for 2 hours. We have 30 people's salaries times. That's not bad.
Who does it in fewer takes, Savage or Brendan?
Brendan.
Oh, there it is.
Oh.
There it is.
So Brendan will come in having never read the script, but he'll get through the takes usually easier. Savage, I need to like coax the inflection out of you a little more, but you're nailing like the line readings and the line memorization. Brendan has a little harder time with memorization, but he nails the inflection. Savage, you have a harder time with inflection, but you nail the line.
And reading. That's exactly what I was talking about before. That's what I need your direction on often.
There you go.
See?
Wow, turning a dig into a compliment, that is some CEO shit right there.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Chris, where can people find you to connect with you to learn more?
Oh, funny you should ask, Chris. You can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at CRL Video. I'm also hot on LinkedIn, sharing lots of good stuff on LinkedIn. Chris Lavigne, LAVIGNEE. Endorse me on LinkedIn while you're at it.
Yeah, so yeah, my mom endorses people. He needs them.
My mom will actually think that I do a good job at my job.
That's what it's for. That's what LinkedIn is for.
Just validation from your parents.
Yep. That's it.
All right. Great.
Amazing. Thank you.
Guys, this was a blast.
It's me again.
Frank the Ad Guy.
And this month's podcast shout-out goes out to Success Story. Hosted by Scott D. Clary, the show dives into the playbooks, mindsets, and success stories from some of the top business leaders. Check it out at HubSpot.com/podcastnetwork or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, back to Talking Too Loud.
Ah, Mr. Chris Lavigne. You know, it's weird to do these when you actually know the person quite well. That's like, know. Do I ask questions that I know the answer to, but that are helpful for people who don't know him?
For me, yes. For me, you do. You ask that because he is he is a wealth of video knowledge, right?
Like yes.
This man is like he practices what he preaches, right? He is playing with new equipment, playing with new software.
Yes.
And people who are not you or don't work so closely with Chris, like they want to know what the heck is up. They're like, share everything. But yes, as I'm sure it is very strange for you to be like.
As an interviewer, it's like, well, I don't really need to interview this person because I know them quite well. But I do want to get into some big topics that, like, we don't always have the chance to dig into, which did happen this episode, which I thought was great. And, you know, it's funny. I was also thinking as we were recording just about how much the production has changed at Wistia, like, the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Where there were many times, especially when we were in person, where someone would have an idea for some concept and they would have to sell it. Chris would be selling, trying to convince people of an idea. And he'd be running around and be like, what about this? What about that? And what if there was like a musical that we did? And you'd have to like, you know, build this momentum to get people on board. And now he doesn't do that. It happens, but it happens much faster, tighter, smaller group. And instead, it's a lot of what he was talking about. It was like, well, he makes a really rough version in an afternoon. And he shares that around. And what I find so interesting about that is like, it's a lot much less time debating if we should do it or not. It's like, oh, this direction, this voice, this script, do we like what it feels like? And so the pace is just so, so much faster than it used to be. And it's kind of amazing because I don't even know what it's going to look like in 5 years, but I imagine it's going to continue to change like extremely rapidly.
Yeah, that says a lot about generative AI to me, that it's just like it is cutting time out of pre-production and pitching like nobody's business. But it also... hearing you say like 5 years ago, he had to like sell you on ideas. It makes me think that like Wistia knows its brand better than ever today. And so like you're more aligned on.
Yes, that's true.
The style, the tone, so like it's two things happening hand in hand.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think we are more aligned on the brand than ever. I think there is a lot of clarity about who to go to and trust for different types of things, and people kind of understand that. So it allows us to make decisions quickly, which is also interesting because the amount of content we're making is greater than it's ever been. Right. And I think that's what's really cool is like having the clarity of the brand, having the understanding of the audience in each case and how quickly we can go is put us in this position to make more content than we ever have.
100%.
But like the size of the team that's making it is not that different than it used to be. That's what kind of blows
my
mind.
That is crazy to me. I mean, I'm always like, hire another video producer. But the fact that you are able to put out so much more without dramatically changing the number of people who are making it is unreal. That's unreal.
It is crazy. And it's also just this understanding too of like what types of videos, like how much prep and sign off and needs to go into something versus when we're doing something really organic, how the prep and the sign off like kills it.
Yeah.
So it's also just the spectrum of what's possible, which personally just, I mean, it makes it so fun. It's so fun to do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like the spontaneous, or I guess it's not spontaneous for Chris, but spontaneous for you and Brendan. The spontaneous
shoots. Oh, just keep it fun for me. Just keep it fun for me.
Where it's like, we're shooting something. We're not going to tell you what.
We're at your house. We have a Cybertruck. Are you ready?
I think that also, you know, for businesses who are just starting a video team or are like in the early days of scaling their video marketing, like get that team like aligned in more ways than just like workflow. Like get those personality, go hang out. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Be friends.
Yeah. Focus on the vibe. It actually matters.
Vibes are real.
Vibes are real. They're real.
Okay.
Well, look, that was a fun one. Another great show in the books. Thanks for joining us. Wherever you watch or listen, please don't forget to like and subscribe. It helps get the word out there, helps other people discover the show. If there's someone that you think that we should have on Talking Too Loud, please hit us up at ttlpod@wiss.com. And if you give us a guest that we get on the show, we'll say some merch. Love to thank you back that way. So I think that's it. Until next time, everybody, take it easy and see you soon.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage. Produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.